all of downtown gets a very significant boost in when the legislators and their staff arrive in town, and we look forward to it every year.
Juneau businesses prepare for the start of the legislative session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly from Juneau for Monday, January 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, celebrating Martin Luther King Day in Alaska.
Overcoming is the responsibility and challenge of every individual in his generation.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Tomorrow, the legislature gavels back in, and for lawmakers, things look a lot different than they did last January. There's no oil tax legislation to tackle, and the state's budget outlook is not quite as rosy as it's been in past years. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez will be heading up our Capitol coverage, and she's here today to talk to us about what's at stake over the next few months. Hello, Alexandra.
Hi, Lori.
So, with the oil tax fight behind the legislature, what's expected to occupy lawmakers' time?
Well, we should have another energy tax fight of sorts. After hinting at this for months, Governor Sean Parnell announced earlier this January that the state had reached a commercial agreement with the North Slope producers and TransCanada to build a large diameter gas line. There are a lot of things that need to happen for that pipeline to be built, but probably foremost among those things is the legislature needs to pass some enabling bills to allow another contract to be signed, essentially. They need to authorize shipping agreements, and they also need to make changes to the state's gas tax structure if they're going to proceed with the terms of the agreement that was reached. What it sounds like is they're going to be looking at a gross tax of 8% to 13%, which is a big change from what is currently in place because that system is just exactly the same as the oil tax structure. In addition to looking at gas taxes and other bits and pieces that have to do with the pipeline, lawmakers have, you know, suggested that their top priorities are things like education, things like paying off the state's unfunded pension liabilities, and, as always, federal overreach.
Let's get more detail about the education aspect of what they'll be working on.
So with the bill that the governor introduced in December, what we're looking at is the fifth year of the base student allocation, which is the per student funding, being set at about $5,700. Democrats have been pushing for an increase to the BSA for a while, saying that this amounts to a cut in funding because of inflation. Meanwhile, Republicans have been saying that education has been funded at record rates over the past few years. And the truth is they're both right. If you look at a study by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, if you take kind of the five-year view, Alaska's one of the top 10 states for keeping up with inflation. But if you only look at the past couple of years, we are the worst in the country. How they're going to solve this is unclear. The governor has suggested that there might be more of a place for charter schools, which he seems to think could be more efficiently funded. And there's also been talk of maybe creating an education endowment fund. But we really won't have more details on this until the governor's State of the State on Wednesday.
Not too long ago, the state was putting massive amounts of money toward capital projects. Now the Department of Revenue has forecast a $2 billion shortfall over the next session.
It's safe to say that the party's basically over for the legislature when it comes to capital spending. The budget bill that the governor introduced in December cuts capital spending by a third, down to $1.7 billion. Now, that'll probably go up. He said there's a little bit of wiggle room for legislators to add their own projects, but it definitely won't be the amounts that we've seen during times of surplus. On top of that, we're kind of seeing the legislature behave more cautiously with spending in other ways. If you look at the pre-filed bills, basically the early bills filed before the session gavels in this year, most of them don't have fiscal notes at all, really. The legislature doesn't anticipate they'll cost the state any money. You've got bills that would regulate drones, for example. You've got bills that would make Alaska's native languages official languages for the state. And while these pieces of legislation are certainly significant, they don't necessarily put any pressure on the state treasury.
Alexandra, this is the second of two sessions for the 28th legislature. How does that change the dynamic in the Capitol?
Things should be pretty hectic because if bills don't pass, they're dead. This is the second of two sessions, so there's no chance to come back next year, pick up where you left off, and get your bill through. You would have to start all over. So far, the legislature has seen about 250 bills introduced, and they've passed fewer than 50. They're going to probably want to close that gap as much as possible in a lot of ways over the next few months. So the final weeks of session especially will probably be a madhouse with all the different legislatures trying to move their priorities forward.
All right. Thanks for providing us some clarity on that, Alexandra.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
Tomorrow, leaders of the Republican and Democratic caucuses will walk us through their priorities. U.S. Senator Mark Begich has taken a definitive stand against the Pebble Mine. He told the Anchorage Daily News over the weekend that he can't support the proposed mine in southwestern Alaska. In doing so, he's broken away from the rest of Alaska's congressional delegation and his three Republican challengers. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Begich says it wasn't just the watershed assessment the EPA released last week that convinced him. The assessment found that under likely scenarios, the gold and copper mine would destroy miles of salmon streams and wetlands, posing a significant risk to salmon and Alaska Native culture. The senator says he's also relying on what he's learned from people on both sides of the issue.
A lot of Alaskans, I mean thousands of Alaskans have contacted me on this. It's come clear to me that wrong mine, wrong place.
The senator says he doesn't believe it's possible for Pebble to proceed on the scale they've discussed without damaging the salmon the region depends on. But Begich says his views aren't intended to prevent the Pebble partnership from submitting a plan for formal review.
No, I mean, if they want to apply for the permits, that's their decision. I think what, you know, my position on it is, you know, no different than, you know, Senator Stevens or Governor Hammond or Governor Knowles, and that is I've looked at the project, I've reviewed it. I've determined based on this that it's a mine that, you know, I'm not going to be supportive of.
The two Republicans in Alaska's delegation to Congress have focused their criticism on the process. They say it was wrong for the EPA to conduct a study when the mine hasn't submitted applications yet. And besides, it should be a state decision because the mine would be on state land. Senator Lisa Murkowski says Pebble should show the state its mine won't damage the fisheries. And if it can't, the project shouldn't move forward.
But I do think that there are criteria that it should be judged by. And right now, we don't have a plan in front of the state for consideration. So yes, it is, for me, it really is about the process that we're talking about here.
The three Republicans hoping to unseat Begich in November have also focused on the EPA's intervention. In a statement, former Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan says Alaskans are tired of Washington erecting hurdles to development. Attorney Joe Miller says the EPA is seizing powers beyond those the founders intended for the federal government. And Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell, hitting a campaign theme, says the decision should be made in Alaska. They all accuse Begich of being in league with Washington bureaucrats, although the mine has significant opposition among Alaskans, too. Tim Bristol has been campaigning against Pebble on behalf of Trout Unlimited. Bristol says he thinks it's a dodge for Alaskan politicians to just blame the EPA.
I think that taking a position that you can't take a position because there isn't a plan, but then criticize the process, I think you're getting out on really thin ice with the Alaskan public because we know that there's a plan in place.
He says Pebble officials have spoken of the plan and outlined it in financial documents. John Shively, CEO of Pebble Partnership, says the EPA's science is limited, and he calls Begich misguided. He says Pebble should be allowed to go through the permitting process and be judged there. And Shively says it irks him when people press his company to submit a plan, as Senator Murkowski did last summer.
We actually ought to be commended for taking our time. We've spent over $600 million. This is a complicated project. It is a large mine in a very sensitive area, just to start with. And then we need a transportation system, a road, a railroad, or pipelines. All those things are possibilities. We need a large port facility. We need 500 megawatts of power, which is almost about what Anchorage uses. So this project is complicated, and it takes time.
Northern Dynasty, the company that owns Pebble, has been pursuing the project for more than a decade. It says it may be ready to apply for permits later this year. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, K300 mushers describe challenging trail conditions.
It was a tough trail all the way around. Swam all the way up, most of the way back, and then bounced across the moguls the rest of the time.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Premier Dental Group, providing full-service dental care for the entire family with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Service information at smilealaska.com. And by the 2014 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com.
Curtis Thayer has been named commissioner for the Alaska Department of Administration. Governor Sean Parnell named Thayer to the position today. Thayer had been filling in as acting commissioner since last month following the resignation of Becky Haltberg. Before that, Thayer served as deputy commissioner for administration. According to Parnell's office, Thayer's prior work includes serving as a deputy commissioner in the State Commerce Department, working for NSTAR Natural Gas Company, and serving as a congressional aide. Dozens of lawmakers and their staffers are relocating to the capital city for tomorrow's start of the legislative session. Lobbyists and reporters will also spend at least part of the 90-day session in Juneau. The temporary population influx provides an important revenue boost to many local businesses. APRN's Annie Feit walked around downtown Juneau this morning and talked with several shop owners.
I'm David Otteson. I own Rainbow Foods. Rainbow Foods is a natural food store, and we also have a lunch bar and deli.
What's it like for you when the session starts up?
Well, it just gets a lot more busy, especially during lunch, because we are only a block from the state capitol, so there's, you know, not only the legislators, but all the people who, all the staff and people who work in the Capitol building. I mean, the Capitol building is pretty dead for the rest of the year when the legislature isn't here, but when they come to town, you know, there's quite a few people who work there and are looking for a quick place to get something to eat. So we see probably in our lunch business maybe a 40% uptick.
Are there certain things you sell more of?
Well, over the years, there's a few things I've noticed. Stress vitamins. Of course, the lunch bar does a lot more business. And we also sell a lot more kind of quick foods, things that people can heat up in their microwave. So there seem to be a lot of people looking for quick meals. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Mindy with the Franklin Street Barbers here in Juneau. I get a few of the legislators and some of their staff, and just get to know them a little more on a personal basis. It's kind of fun to connect faces and different issues that are happening.
Yeah, do you get like the inside scoop?
No. They're pretty professional. They're like, yeah, I'm not sure. No, I don't. I haven't heard anything about it. So they're very professional and kind of just they're businesslike.
I'm Royce Metz. Yeah, I run the Rainy Retreat Books. We're a mixture bookstore, used, new, rare, oddball, a potpourri of books.
And so what happens when the legislature starts?
There's an increase of business because there's people in town. There's new people in town. They come in. They want stuff to do. They want to read. It's just, you know, more flow. Legislative and lobbyists, they seem to be readers and drinkers.
Have you already seen an increase?
A mild increase, but it's also, like I said, it was mainly people, I left my books all at home and I'm just up here for the season, so I need something to read. That's the general reason.
My name is Jill Ramiel, and I own the Silver Bow Inn, Bakery, Catering, and New Wine Bar. All of downtown gets a very significant boost in when the legislators and their staff arrive in town, and we look forward to it every year.
Is it pretty substantial?
We could not survive without it. I mean, there's no way to go. Pretty much the way that there are three seasons in Juneau. There's fall, where we lose money every day we're open and operating our business, to legislative session, where we can breathe and we hire more staff and we could expand our hours and do more fun things. And then there's summer and all the tourist season. And so once you get to the end of the summer, you really have to cut all of your expenses and just huddle until you get to session again. We opened a wine bar just last week, and whenever I've mentioned it to people in town, they have said, oh, the legislative staff is going to love that.
And you think it's true?
I don't know yet. It's too new. I hope so. We're hoping so.
David Otteson, Mindy Rogenkamp, Royce Metz, and Jay Ramil, Jill Ramil, own or manage businesses in downtown Juneau. Alaskans celebrated Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday with songs and remarks from state and local leaders. In Anchorage, Reverend Alonzo Patterson told young people at Bartlett High School that although they weren't born yet when King died in 1968, they owed the civil rights leader a big thank you.
I'm often asked by young people through the years, if you will, who were not even born when Dr. King was assassinated, when will we overcome? I share with them, as I share with you today, overcoming is a residual evolution of every generation.
The Martin Luther King Citywide Celebration Choir added their voices to the ceremony while performers danced in white and gold. Representatives of Anchorage's many ethnic groups were invited to the special celebration. Lucy Hansen is with the Polynesian Association of Alaska.
Remember, Dr. King believed in a nation of freedom and justice for all of us. He encouraged us, the nation, people from all walks of life, everywhere, to reflect the principle of nonviolent social change and racial equality. We need not just remember this day. We need not just celebrate, but we also need to act on it.
In Juneau, high school student Nathal Sims says she is able to attend schools with integrated classrooms and get a good education because of the civil rights leader.
Because he stood up and fought for the rights of people of color, I have been able to go to schools with many other nationalities, Mexican, Italian, German, anything, you name it. We are able to attend school together.
Sims spoke to a crowd of nearly 150 people at Juneau's community celebration honoring Martin Luther King Jr. She is the recipient of a scholarship from the Black Awareness Association of Juneau, which sponsored the event held at St. Paul's Catholic Church. President Sherry Patterson says Sims and the other speakers sent home a strong message.
We are one people. We are a rainbow of color in this community. And when we come together with events like this, it empowers us to do better.
Juneau's Black Awareness Association will now start preparing to celebrate Black History Month events in February.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD. Paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov or on Facebook. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
24-year-old Roan Boozer of Big Lake won the Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race yesterday, crossing the finish line in Bethel at 9:18 a.m. KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes reports.
Boozer beat out Jeff King by 7 minutes after battling it out for the last 100 miles. He took the lead when King had trouble finding the trail in the dark, where some markers were missing.
I figured he'd try to catch me, so I had to push a little bit myself, because I know his team has a lot of speed, too, but my guys, they went fast.
While looking for the trail, 58-year-old King says his dog's tangled up on glare ice. But he says that can be the way it goes when you're leading the race.
Because that's where you find out where the problems are, and I ran smack into one, and by the time we got it fixed, I was a big knot, and my snaps were all covered with ice, and I couldn't get them untangled, and Roan zoomed right on by.
Conditions were everything but cold this year, with temperatures mostly above freezing. Teams traversed bare tundra, glare ice, and over 100 miles of water-covered river. Nearly all mushers called it a tough race, including third-place finisher Sim Smith.
The biggest challenge was all that water going from Bogus to Kalskag that first night. It was just horrendous, and you never knew how deep it was going to be, and you just had to go find out by getting in it.
My feet are all clean now. I don't have to wash them.
That's 10th-place finisher Tony Browning, who is 56 years old.
It was a tough trail all the way around. Swam all the way up, most of the way back, and then mouse across the moguls the rest of the time.
4th-place finisher Paul Gebhardt lost the back part of his sled going over bare tundra in the first 25 miles. The 57-year-old says he saw other mushers' sled parts along the trail, too.
It was really bumpy. Fortunately, I salvaged my cooler before it broke off, and then I drug it along up the 2XX.
But Browning says it's just what mushers expect when they sign up for the K300.
This is the best race going. You don't just race your competitors. You got to race the weather, too, all the elements. That's what cross-country mid-distance is all about.
24 teams competed this year. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
On Saturday, volunteers with the Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race gathered drop bags from mushers in both Whitehorse and Fairbanks. Over the next 2 weeks, race personnel will deliver the bags to 9 checkpoints along the 1,000-mile trail. As KUAC's Emily Schwing found out, packing more than 1,500 pounds of food and gear for a remote sled dog race is a long, logistically challenging process.
So you get your beef and your kibble.
Fairbanks musher Mike Ellis spent more than a week filling large white bags with all the things he needs along the Yukon Quest Trail.
And then a glove bag, so I've got nice dry, warm gloves when I get there. I always throw some hand warmers in because, you know, it's bound to be 50 below somewhere on the quest.
We're standing inside his guest cabin. Various piles of food and gear cover the floor and fill the corners. Across the yard, boxes filled with all different kinds of things sit on the front porch of his house.
That looks like the burrito box. About 10 different kinds of burritos made up and breakfast burritos.
There's been gear spread all over the place for a week or two. Behind us, white ice cube trays are stacked high along the outside wall of the house.
Those are electrolyte cubes that get sent out for the dogs if it gets really warm.
If it gets really warm. Ellis and a team of charismatic Siberian Huskies will start the race for the 6th time this year. He's run the quest enough to know he should be prepared for anything. It's kind of a logistical nightmare. When the weather's warm, dogs need more water. If it's super cold, they'll want more fat. So Ellis has to pack 2 different kinds of food.
Fish and chicken skins. You know, if it's warm, I'm feeding the fish, and if it's cold, I'm feeding the chicken skins. And one or the other of them is just going to get set aside when we get to that checkpoint. You know that right off the bat.
Sled dogs also experience physiological changes as they travel farther down the trail.
In the beginning of the race, you're feeding a lot more protein, and then in the end of the race, or middle to end of the race, you're feeding a lot more fat because the dog's metabolism changes and shifts to burning fat.
So drop bags Mike Ellis packs for the beginning of the race are different from those waiting for him at checkpoints near the end. There's also human food in those bags. Ellis says he's learned over the years that there are some things he just can't leave home without.
You know, I used to go off coffee for the race, and now I find that going off coffee messes me up way more than staying on it for the race. Things like that. I eat a lot more bread and carbs on the race than I used to. I used to think I was a little more doggy, eating, being able to eat just fat the whole way, and that wasn't very kind to my body.
There's also one food in particular that's become wildly popular among mushers in recent years.
Candied bacon, yes. I don't think it's possible to go down the Quest Trail without that stuff.
It's true. It's so good. It's sometimes at the beginning of the race, you don't really want it, but by the end, you just crave it. That's all you want.
That's Fairbanks musher Cody Straith. He also spent the last week frantically piecing together his drop bags for a second run down the Quest Trail. He's standing in front of a freezer in his Arctic entryway. It's stuffed full of food prepared by friends.
We've got like peanut butter bars and peanut butter cookies and smoothies.
Outside his house, a giant meat saw ran all week. Straith and his handlers cut countless 50-pound frozen blocks of beef, lamb, and other meat into chunks for his dog team. They also sliced up chunks of fish. Aside from all the food, mushers also stuff drop bags with extra runner plastic and other parts for their sleds. They also have to pack required gear like dog booties. According to the race rules, mushers must have 8 booties for every dog on the trail. Back inside, there are rows of bags stuffed with booties sitting on Straith's couch. He'll also bring along extra boots, boot liners, and socks for his own feet.
I've got enough socks to have a fresh pair of socks at every checkpoint.
Ziploc bags filled with first aid items cover Straith's kitchen countertop.
I've got stuff for vet care in here. I carry some homemade fire starters, wax and sawdust, so if I get myself in trouble, I can start a fire real quick. Matches, lighter, lithium batteries for my headlamps.
In the end, he packed roughly 40 drop bags for this year's Yukon Quest. Mike Ellis says he usually sends about 35. But neither musher wants to consider the cost of all this food and gear.
This time of year, we try not to look at it because it's too depressing.
It's a lot. I don't even want to think about it, really.
Drop bags will be delivered to 9 checkpoints along the Quest Trail over the next 2 weeks. For KUAC News, I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Lisa Fu in Juneau, Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our Anchorage audio engineer is Dave Waldron. We had Juno help tonight from KTOO and Kevin Hurtley. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. Electronic health records free Alaskans from the paper chase by giving doctors, nurses, and families secure access to medical information when and where they need it. Electronic health records increase safety and security. Electronic records take health information out of the filing cabinet and into the digital light. You can find out more at ak-ehealth.org. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services in partnership with the Alaska eHealth Network.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.